Welcome to Prognosis. I'm Laura Carlson. It's day 140 since coronavirus was declared a global pandemic. Today's main story: the virus is surging in the U.S., but we still don't have good, accessible data about the outbreak. That's left the public in the dark about how bad things really are. But first, here's what happened in virus news today. The United States is about to reach 150,000 coronavirus deaths, and things continue to get worse in COVID hotspots. Florida posted a record number of virus deaths for a second straight day. Arizona's infection rate jumped. And in Texas, Hurricane Hanna came ashore Saturday and knocked out power to more than 300,000 homes and businesses. New coronavirus guidelines for line crews, along with flooding, are complicating efforts to turn the lights back on. Some in the region may be without power for a week. Russia plans to register a coronavirus vaccine as soon as August 10th. That would clear the way for what would be the world's first official approval of an inoculation. The drug, developed by Moscow's Gamaleya Institute and the Russian Direct Investment Fund, may be approved for civilian use within 3 to 7 days of registration by regulators. The information comes from a person familiar with the process, who asked not to be identified because the information isn't public. Finally, in most places, so-called herd immunity won't be achieved before a vaccine is widely available. But in some of India's largest slums, around 6 in 10 people have antibodies for the novel coronavirus, indicating they had the virus and recovered. That means the country's poorest areas have one of the highest population immunity levels worldwide. And now for today's main story. More than a month into a resurgence of the novel coronavirus that has besieged Sunbelt states, flooded hospitals, and strained public health infrastructure, the U.S. still lacks a complete picture of the reality on the ground. That's because the U.S. doesn't have any official real-time system to track the virus's spread. At times, even the federal government has had to rely on third-party databases. I talked to reporter Emma Court, who explained the danger of a COVID data black hole. What are some of the problems we're seeing with the U.S., specifically with regard to tracking virus data?
The reality is that the United States doesn't have a good national, real-time, public picture of COVID-19 in the country, even today. It's sort of staggering when you say it out loud, but for the people who are monitoring this crisis every day, this is just a reality of the situation. There isn't an accessible real-time system to track the virus's spread. In this void, a lot of other tools have cropped up from third parties and things like that. You know, Johns Hopkins has become a big source of a lot of coronavirus data. But the real issue, and you know, there's been a lot of attribution of failures during this crisis to the Trump administration, and they've certainly played a role in this. But I see this as a confluence of different factors. We've had decades of neglect of the technological public health infrastructure in this country, and there's this history of federalism, of states taking their own approaches to different things, including public health data. And the result is this sort of crisis that's been exacerbated in many ways by the strategy taken by the Trump administration, which has been each state is going to do their own thing. And data is such an essential component of whether you can reopen, whether it's advisable to reopen. The government admits that they have big gaps in data reporting. A lot of experts have turned in the void of a really reliable federal system to the different state dashboards. So I think many of us have become familiar with this. You can log on. I'm in New York. You can log on and see what New York's numbers are that day, how things are changing. But each state also reports data very differently. And so you can't necessarily cobble together all of these 50 different state dashboards, for instance, and get a national picture that is really comprehensive, because everyone talks about the numbers a little differently. They measure it a little differently. And there's just so much variation in this data.
You know, what are some of these variations or differences in reporting that make it so difficult to get a comprehensive national picture, especially when we're looking at how the states are reporting things differently?
What's interesting is this nonprofit called Resolve to Save Lives actually took a deep dive into this, and they looked at all the different state dashboards, and they basically came up with this list of 15 essential data points and how ideally you would want to be tracking these measures like new cases, deaths, and hospitalizations. And after they went through the ways each state did this, they found what they described was an information catastrophe. They found that even these metrics people are often turning to, like new cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, weren't reported in a standard manner. An example of this is, for instance, in Florida, until recently, they weren't reporting new hospitalizations each day. They were reporting cumulative hospitalizations each day. And that may not seem so difficult. I mean, you can look at the numbers from before and you can do the math, but the result is that you can't easily grab 50 sets of state data and combine them and get a really good picture of what's going on. And also, you know, it takes time to dive into these numbers and understand what their implications are. And so if each state is reporting numbers slightly differently, that makes it harder to understand what's happening in that state just off the top. And the big issue here is the public knowledge, right? So public health officials in these states have access to data. The problem is we've seen so many errors be made that it's important to have this public accountability so the public can understand, for instance, how the state is managing the local conditions, but also understand, is it safe for me right now to be going out in my community? And these are important things that have major implications for how people lead their lives, what level of risk they expose themselves to, and it matters.
I want to turn now maybe to the federal level. It seems that hospitals have been told not to send virus data to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, but instead to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Now, I was hoping you might explain, why would there be this change in the middle of the pandemic of where this data was sent?
Yeah, so in some ways, the reason this change was made really has to do with these data issues. So, you know, when they made this change a couple of weeks ago, the agency said the idea was to streamline the system and better present what data they had and what data they didn't have. And this is data that has really important implications. It helps, you know, the agencies decide where to send things like medical supplies, right? It helps inform the government's response. But the concern was the CDC is the premier public health agency in this country. Their job is to maintain public databases like this. They have worked with data like this for years. You know, this is what they do. And the concern is, are you taking the data away from the agency that knows how to deal with the data? And is there some politics involved here? The CDC is viewed as having been largely cut out of the U.S.'s response to COVID-19. And the question is this data still going to be available to the public? Are we going to get a better system here? Or is the system going to become even less transparent than it was before? And I think it's important to note the HHS perspective on this is a way of being more transparent. We're making even more data available. And there are gaps in our data reporting, but we are sharing what the gaps are through this new data system.
Let's look at this in a broader international context. How does the U.S.'s approach to tracking virus data compare to what some other countries are doing worldwide?
What's really striking about the patchwork system we have here in the United States is that other countries have made their data more accessible in one place. So right now I could log on to South Korea's CDC and see, you know, information about their testing efforts, information on a daily basis about what's happening in that country. Australia is also a very large country, like the US, has a similar system set up as well. And to be sure, in many parts of the world, there are issues with how they've handled the COVID response. But in some ways, what's happened in the US is very surprising from an international perspective. You know, we're a country that's gotten involved in public health all around the world. We have the pharmaceutical companies that are developing all these COVID vaccines. Many are based here in the United States. So in some ways, the U.S. is thought to have been a world leader in health crises specifically. And it's not just data where our reputation is suffering, but it's certainly a part of it.
That was Emma Court. And that's it for our show today. For coverage of the outbreak from 120 bureaus around the world, visit Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. And if you like the show, please leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's the best way to help more listeners find our global reporting. The Prognosis Daily Edition is produced by Topher Forges, Jordan Gaspure, Magnus Henriksen, and me, Laura Carlson. Today's main story was reported by Emma Court. Original music by Leo Sidran. Our editors are Rick Schein and Francesca Levy. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks for listening.